Very few people ever got the better of my Uncle Silas. Whether it was in the business of eating and drinking, fishing or poaching, women or prize parsnips. And about the only person ever to do so was my Aunt Tibby. I've never quite understood what the name Tibby stood for, but my aunt, who comes from the opposite branch of the family from my Uncle Silas, that is to say the Rivers branch, and an exceptionally proud, sharp branch it is, was a very remarkable woman. She not only outdid my Uncle Silas, she actually outlived him by a year. For the better part of 40 years, my Aunt Tibby kept an extremely comfortable, cosy, spotless little public house called the Haymakers, on the borders of Bedfordshire. This pub had something of the appearance of an elongated beehive. Its walls of white plaster were most pleasantly roofed with a thick brown nest of thatch that curved up and over the 5 little leaded dormer windows. Downstairs, the same number of casement windows, each heavy with trim white lace curtains, looked over a garden, crowded in summer with orange marigolds, rambler roses, white Madonna lilies, and huge scarlet and yellow dahlias that lay among their lush dark leaves like splendid fruit tarts fresh from my Aunt Tibby's baking. For my Aunt Tibby, among a great many other virtues, some of which were daunting, not to say formidable, others of which were enchanting, was a remarkable cook. Her raised game pies, prepared for the great shoots of Victorian winter times, were famous. A hot Irish stew, always ready for hunting men when they came in half-frozen from scathing midwinter meats, was so excellent that the recipe for it can be found in a volume of English Native Dishes under the title of Mrs. Rivers Hunting Irish Stew, 1885. She was also renowned for several other excellent dishes. Notable among them, Yorkshire pudding, cheesecakes, eel pie, and chicken pudding. But among the most singular of her triumphs was her way with mashed potatoes. No one has ever really been near to gastronomic heaven unless he has tasted my Aunt Tibby's mashed potatoes. Smooth, white and airy as swan's down, served with glorious parsley butter, they remain in my mind with the same exquisite pleasure as the pure, high, white clouds of a childhood summer's day. My Aunt Tibby was very justly proud and jealous of the Haymakers, with its floors scrubbed as clean and white as bone, its parlour cool in summer and snug as a moleskin in winter, its hunting and shooting patronage, and its impeccable standards of country food and drink and comfort, in which the most discriminating of the aristocracy, yeomanry, squirearchy, could find absolute satisfaction. And there could never be, in consequence, as my Uncle Silas discovered, any monkey business at the Haymakers. Looking back, I see that I have described my Aunt Tibby's pub, garden food and drink, without having described my Aunt Tibby herself. In some ways, this is rather difficult. In another way, not. For in many ways, my Aunt Tibby was, strangely enough, not at all unlike an Uncle Silas in skirts. I do not mean at all to suggest by this that she was a misshapen old female rapscallion who ate too much, drank too much, told too many lies, or was fond of slap and tickle in the bar. She was in every way above reproach in these things. I simply mean that she gave the same impression of many-sidedness, craftiness, wisdom, and that deep native cunning that was his charm. I simply wish to convey that she was, like him, a very deep one, indeed. She was a fairly tall woman, angular, long-armed, and rather iron-clad about the bust. I cannot remember ever having seen her in anything but black. Her hair was black, too, and was invariably scraped up into a kind of big oval pincushion on the top of her head. Her dresses always had high lace collars boned at the side, and the only luxury in the way of ornament that she ever permitted herself was a round silver brooch at her neck. You might well expect from this that her face would be one of exceptional pallor, high resolve, and severity. In fact, it was a very deceptive face. It was, in the first place, very red. It flamed with myriads of tiny, tangled crimson veins, and its mouth was sharp and thin. Its deception lay in the fact that because of its redness, you expected it to be jolly, and because of the thinness of its mouth, you expected it to be severe. The truth was that it was both severe and jolly. The mouth appeared to be full of the sternest unspoken reprimands. It was only when you looked at the bright, clear blue eyes that you saw that they were almost constantly laughing. Then you saw that all the myriad crimson wrinkles of her face seemed to be laughing too. And sometimes, to your great astonishment, she suddenly winked at you. I must here remove what I feel may be one further mistaken impression about her. She was not abstemious. Like my Uncle Silas, she very much liked a tot of this or that. She was very partial to a drop of whiskey. Under the ironclad bust, she was ripe and warm. She took a drink with her customers and liked a joke at the bar. But she was also a disciplinarian, and what she would never permit, as my Uncle Silas discovered, was any monkey business. She always insisted, for instance, that her barmaids were well-spoken, clean, good to look at, and well-behaved. "I like a girl with pride about her," she would say. "I'll have no sluts here. I like my girls to be looked at, but they'll behave themselves, or they'll know the reason why." My Uncle Silas was never a very frequent visitor to the Haymakers, and after the end of the 1890s, in fact, he ceased to be a visitor at all. Why he ceased to be a visitor was one of those things which, for reasons best known to himself, he did not choose to tell me. My Aunt Tibby told me instead. "About that time, I had a very pretty little maid named Thirza," she said. "Rather an unusual name, but then she was an unusual girl. Came from a very nice family, 4 boys and 3 girls, all the girls very dark and very nice-looking. Thirza was the eldest. Dark, glossy hair, dark eyes, very nice little figure, and very capable hands." The reason for my Aunt Tibby's mention of the hands was because, as she explained, the girl was a very capable cook. "You get girls that are good behind the bar, nice to the gentleman, and so on," my Aunt Tibby said to me, "but cooking they can't abide. But Thirza wasn't only good behind the bar and nice to the gentleman, she could cook. She wanted to learn." "A treasure?" "A treasure," my aunt said. "Worth her weight in gold. Quick as a little linnet. In fact, that's what she looked like. Quick and bright as a linnet, and just about as nice as could be. I wouldn't have lost her for the world." Another remarkable thing about the girl, my Aunt Tibby said, was the speed with which she could pick up things, and soon my aunt was teaching her to make the famous raised game pies, the Mrs. Rivers hunting Irish stew, the eel pie, the chicken pudding, the cheesecakes, and all the rest. "And then, one day," she said, "I think it will be the latter part of the summer of 98, I'll be burned if your Uncle Silas didn't drop in one evening." "Trouble? Not immediately," she said. "You know Silas. He thinks about women a lot, but he thinks of his belly first. I knew what he was after. He wanted to gorge himself on home-brewed and game pie. I used to keep a fair drop of home-brewed in those days. It came from a farm up the hill, and it was very powerful." "Game pie in summer?" She stared at me very severely. "You'd be surprised," she said, "how often pheasants break their necks on telegraph wires?" And I could have sworn she winked at me. "Well, he stayed quite a while that night," she said, "gorging himself on cold pie and home-brewed and generally getting sauced up. But it wasn't until he was ready to go home that he caught sight of Thirza. She'd been in the kitchen all afternoon and evening, getting things ready for a big fishing party we had the next day." I asked her how my Uncle Silas had reacted to his first meeting with this delightful creature. "Uncommon quiet," she said. "Too quiet. I didn't like it at all." She went on to say something about still waters running deep, and it was on the tip of my tongue to make a poorish pun about still rivers running deep, too, when she said, "He was back the next day. More game pie, And he was back the next, she said, and the next, and the next. The reprobate, the old rascal. You must have been getting very short of pheasants by this time, I said. And she gave me one of her sharpest, severest looks. Sometimes, she said, I think you're a chip off the old block. You've got that same artful, mischievous look in your eye. I accepted this flattering comparison with my Uncle Silas in silence. On the fourth visit, she said, I caught him pinching her. Fourth visit, I said, not only uncommonly quiet, but uncommonly slow. I caught her sitting on his lap in the cellar, she said, and him sitting on a barrel of home brewed, very merry and bright, and saying he was going to marry the girl. Marry the girl, I said. And I started to say something about how remarkably well my Uncle Silas must have been enjoying himself when she became very severe again. I could see myself losing a very, very good girl, she said, one way or another. I did not suggest that if I knew my Uncle Silas, I knew which way that would be. I merely asked what sort of shindy she'd kicked up about operations in the cellar, and how soon she'd got somebody to throw him out of the pub. She was most affronted. Somebody, she said, I can throw them out myself when the time comes, thank you. There's never been one I couldn't throw out yet. And she gave me one of those half-stern, half-winking looks that were part of her formidable, baffling charm. No, I didn't throw him out, she said. I invited him back the next Sunday. More game pie? Silas, I said to him, if you're going to marry the girl, you'd better taste her cooking. You can't marry a girl without tasting her cooking. Your belly knows better than that. Come back on Sunday, and Thurza shall cook you a pie. My Aunt Tibby went on to tell me how my Uncle Silas, proud and strutting as a peacock, came back the following Sunday, and how she filled him up with all the home-brewed he wanted, and how at last, in the evening, she had him sitting down in the parlour, waiting for his pie. Made and baked by Thurza, I said to him when I put it down. That'll show you whether she can cook or not. It was, it seemed, a very large and handsome pie. Pheasant, I said. Well, it was very rich, she said. I'll say that, and so was Silas's face when he took the top off. She regarded me for a moment with that almost prim sternness of hers, without a flicker of a smile. I justly forget, she said, whether it had four toads and eight frogs in it, or four frogs and eight toads, or whether it was three live eels and two slow worms, or... Suddenly she broke off and lowered the lid of her left eye with crafty swiftness, giving a pained sigh that reminded me so much of my Uncle Silas when the tales were tallest and the burden of telling the truth was too much to bear. Of course, she said, that was many years before your time.